sweat the technique.
Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. We are the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Astros lost a baseball game yesterday. This is the difference between winning and losing, by the way. If Hader escapes that ninth inning and the Astros win 1-0, we're not talking nearly as negatively about the Astros today as we would be because they blew the save.
It's a fact.
Like, we wouldn't, like, the base running mistakes would have been, oh, that's just Jose Altuve being Jose Altuve. He's cute and he's adorable. Oh, Jake Myers, that silly goof. Falling down, now you wouldn't have had the bottom of the ninth for him to do that, so right. That would have saved him. You wouldn't be talking as badly about the hitting with runners in scoring position because you won the baseball game. So this is like the margin here, because you could very easily, you know, Chaz, that ball is hit 15 feet shorter, Chaz makes the catch, you win that game 1-0. That was the very, very razor-thin difference between winning and losing that game yesterday. But because they lost, sky's falling down, you're 1-5, you're 4 games below 500 for the second time this season, first time the Astros have been 4 games below 500 since June of 2016. A lot of woes for the Astros in the first half a dozen games this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're talking about Fromber all day today.
Yeah,
it's the number one story if they win that ballgame. And, you know, watching that game, it just kept sitting there haunting me going, with every mistake, I kept going, oh, God, they're flirting with disaster. They're just asking for it. And then when Hader got the double play ball, I just kind of took a half sigh of relief going, okay, one out to go. They're going to actually dodge a whole lot of bullets tonight, and they're going to get a big win because now you win the series against Toronto, whether you sweep them or not. But if you do, now everybody's already singing your praises because of Fromber and way he pitched. And now all of a sudden, it's like the sky's falling again, and everybody is mass panic. And it's just the way baseball goes, and people lose sight of how long – it's a marathon, not a sprint – and it's such a long marathon that these things are going to happen. We always talk about during the season, I always say, like, I used to keep track, like, if you have 4 or 5 games all year where you have a game that you should have won that you lost, that's baseball. If you go more than that, that's when you start going, man, that's when you start thinking about it. How did it affect the standings at the end of the year?
Yeah.
But you can afford these. It's just because of what just happened against the Yankees. People are losing their mind.
Yeah, it feels like you've had these are baseball games in each of these losses. Like, you can point to all these losses. Well, it's baseball. You can point to almost every single one of them that way. Eric the Driver, classic AAAS, Astros anemic ace syndrome. I guess that's when their ace is on the mound. Combined with the 10-run curse, the team never stood a chance. Also, TK's call of Myers tried to steal second and fell flat on his face is starting to feel like the motto for this year's team. Let's talk about the base running. Mm. Jake Myers had the excuse yesterday that said he was trying to stop mid-steal because Chad Green used a slide step. But, quote, but at that point, I was taking off, so I was in between. I screwed up. That did not look like you were trying to stop.
No,
it looked like
not.
You got over your skis and flat fell on your face. I'm not buying what Jake Myers is trying to sell us.
Not at all. I think Blummer even said it. He's like, that's the classic case of you did not get your knees high enough and you caught the dirt and you just went face first. That was embarrassing. That was horrible. And I don't know how you cover. I mean, honestly, all three of the base running blunders were just ridiculous. But I don't know how you can cover with that excuse. You just should own it at that point.
The first one from Altuve, I didn't really care about. Like, it was get out of the way of the baseball. Like, be an athlete a little bit, get out of the way. I think that they get Bregman out if it doesn't hit him.
Oh no!
So
I think, yeah,
that one did. Well, that one wasn't punitive.
But how do you not get out of the way of the ball?
No, for sure. For sure. Like, that one was more, oh, come on. That one's more like, you got to be kidding
yeah.
me. But it didn't hurt you.
No.
Like, that, you didn't run into an out. Like, you technically ran into an out. But if he gets out of the way, I feel like get Bregman without a doubt. So that one didn't cost you. But the one that cost you was Jose Altuve in the eighth inning. He's at third base. Your best hitter, arguably. Yiner Diaz is in the box. I know what Altuve was trying to do. Two strikes, two outs. He's thinking breaking ball in the dirt. He's thinking if it gets away from the catcher just a bit, he's going to try to score. But the thing you cannot do is get so far off the bag where you're at risk of being thrown out and backpicked at third base. Altuve's thought was, breaking ball in the dirt, I'm scoring if it gets away from the catcher. He got too far off the bag. You cannot do that. It's a rookie mistake. That's not a rookie mistake. That's a low A-ball mistake that a Hall of Famer made.
Let me put it, it's inexcusable because of the fact that you're a veteran and you know the situation, and you know this isn't Jake Meyers batting in the bottom of the lineup or some where you think, man, we got to get crafty here to try and create a run because we need one. And you're a guy that knows better. The fact that that happened was just inexcusable to me because of the situation, because of the hitter at the plate, because you knew you weren't pushing runs across like you had opportunities to do. That had every opportunity of blowing the game wide open for you, or at least getting that second run that you needed. And now suddenly the momentum's starting to shift, and everybody's looking at it like, what the hell are you guys doing?
Yeah, and I'm not a fan. And I told you this whenever Espada said it in spring training. So this isn't me being hindsight 2020 and being reactionary. I cringed when Espada said he wants a more aggressive ball club running the bases. I cringed whenever I heard that. Because baseball, you get 27 outs. You get 27 outs in a baseball game. When you're running into outs, you are giving them away. Those precious opportunities, you are literally giving them away. I get that the Astros were not good with runners in scoring position yesterday, which is an issue. Like, you need to be a little bit better with runners in scoring position. Absolutely, you do. But you also gave away three opportunities. You gave away, well, two opportunities, because the Altuve running into the ground ball wasn't a giving away of an opportunity. But you also had the Chaz McCormick trying to leg out a double. What was in the third inning?
Yep.
So, like, you gave up three outs. Chaz is trying to leg out a double. Jose Altuve trying to score on a pass ball wild pitch that was caught. And then Jake Meyers falling flat on his face trying to steal in the ninth inning. And you turned a 27-out game into a 24-out game with your aggressive base running. I cringe when Espada said it, and it's playing out just like I thought it was going to.
And whether you think they didn't get a hit or not in the ninth inning, it wouldn't have mattered. But the thing is, Green didn't have control. He was all over the place. I thought they actually did him a couple of solid favors, too. But didn't Altuve say something about he thought the ball got away?
Maybe. I didn't hear that. Yeah, I didn't see Altuve's postgame.
I mean, unless you are dead sure that you see that ball squirting away, and even still, I don't know that you risk it because there's two outs and you've got a good hitter at the plate. I mean, that was one where the comedy of errors turned into a loss that should have been a win, and that was tough to swallow last night, that one there.
Yeah, so you're giving away outs on the bases because it's aggressive base running. I hate that. The other thing is you had opportunities to score from the bottom of the fifth on. Bottom of the fifth, you get a Yiner leadoff double, Abreu fly out, Chaz walk, painted double play. Cool. Bottom of the sixth inning. First and second, two outs for Bregman. Weak grounder. That's the one where it hit Altuve. Cool. Nice job, Breggy. More on him later.
Yes.
Bottom of the seventh, Yiner leadoff walk, Abreu single. Okay, you're in business. And you have runners at first and second. Chaz fly out. Pena pops out. Caratini takes a strike three. Bottom of the eight, Altuve leadoff double. Great, you're in business. Yordan fly out, which is good. Productive out. Mm-hmm. And moved Altuve to third. Good job. I appreciate that at bat from Yordan Alvarez. Tucker walks. Okay, cool. First and third, you got your cleanup man up. Bregman pops out to the catcher.
Awful. It was early in the count, too.
So before you even, like, and this was the play before the Altuve back pick for the third out. Bregman felled you before Altuve felled you. And then bottom of the ninth, Yiner infield single. Abreu strikes out. Meyers falls on his face. Chaz flies out. Game over. So, like, gave away three out on the bases because you're aggressive. Hate it. You can't hit with runners in scoring position. You had opportunities in each of your last five at-bats to score some insurance, and you cannot do it. And this is before we even bring up Josh Hader. Before we even bring up Josh Hader, we're hanging a slider middle.
Yeah, and he had two strikes on him, I believe. But you look at the entire situation going, you wasted an unbelievable effort from a guy that may or may not be your ace, but you needed to see that from him. So you had a great pitching effort, and you had all these different opportunities to kind of put the game away. With every passing inning, it looked like the Blue Jays Springer was the main guy, wearing it on his jersey, on his face, everything, going, man, it's just not our night. We can't catch a break. It looks like their Dobbers were down. You know, even when you were making these mistakes, it looked like they were laughing them off, like, we're going to be fine, until you weren't. And now here we are, and we're sitting there pointing at all these different mishaps, going, I get it, it's early in the season, but what the hell are we doing here? Because Major League Baseball players aren't supposed to be falling flat on their face trying to steal a base. And Jose Altuve, no matter how good he is offensively, has never been a great base runner, as we know. But, like, these kind of mistakes from a guy that is so important to your team, that's a veteran all-star, man, it just – everybody goes, oh, it's okay, it's Altuve. But it's not.
Yeah, that was the real stinker. Like, it stinks when you lose a game, when you're up 1-0 the entire game. You know, score more, don't run into outs, hit with runners in scoring position. The thing that bummed me out was Fromber was dominant.
Like, oh, man, he looked good.
For the positive signs that we saw in Fromber, his first start, okay, clean up the command a little bit. He did that. Yesterday he was Cy Fromber. He was the Fromber Valdez that can contend for an American League Cy Young. Didn't walk anybody, was getting contact early in counts, was getting groundouts. What was it, 13 groundouts for Fromber Valdez? He had 3 double plays. He didn't walk a single person, still punched out 5. Like, that's the Fromber Valdez we want to see. He did it. He left the game with the lead. You didn't have to go to your middle relief. Presley did his job, and then Hader blows the save. That's what really bummed me out. On top of just being bummed out because you lost a close game, which I think you gave away. But cherry on top to being bummed, Fromber Valdez deserved to win yesterday.
No doubt. Look, I think that's the – if you're going to say takeaway number one from that ball game, it's the dominance of Fromber Valdez. The fact that he wasn't giving up, you know, aside from Turner, who had a hell of a dime.
He had a big night.
I mean, he had figured him out. But other than that, like, he was dealing – like you said, the control, when we had so many issues about the first game with the fact that he was walking so many guys and he couldn't find the zone and he didn't have really true control of some of his pitches, he looked like he was in total control of every pitch. He wasn't afraid to throw his off speed on critical pitches in down 3-1 in counts. And you look at it, go, and he went deep. He manages his pitch count. Everything about Fromber Valdez last night was a massive thumbs-up positive for this squad.
Fight Club bracket coming up at 4:30. We'll get your thoughts on the Astros' loss yesterday and the fact that they're 4 games under 500 yet again. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. We know that you're tired of the Astros losing. Are you tired of repairing potholes? Like, you might have some land out in the country, driveway, things like that. Maybe you work in construction. Who knows? But if you're tired of repairing potholes, Third Rock Renewables is for you. It can save you money. It can also help recycle, save the environment. Maybe you need a new parking lot, road, or laid-down yard. Well, Third Rock Renewables is here for you. Their patented technology called mechanical concrete is the only low-cost, industrial-strength, sustainable base which transforms end-of-life tires into a virtually indestructible building product. How about that? These end-of-life tires going out to the landfill, they're not good for nothing. Well, they're good here because they create that industrial strength mechanical concrete that can fix your parking lot, can fix your road, can fix that lay down yard. Get Third Rock Renewables in your life because it can cut your maintenance costs by 75% or more while lowering your carbon emissions. So you can be green, save some green, up to 75% with Third Rock Renewables. Call now, 713-305-0507. Visit thirdrockrenewables.com. Fix those potholes, 713-305-0507 or thirdrockrenewables.com.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Astros lineup is out for today. Rubber game of the 3-game series. Are we bringing back the music? I think this is why the Astros started poorly. I think this is why they've started with a 1-5 record. We need Brian to play the music of the starting pitcher coming out of the final break of the show.
I like it.
So we'll play the music of the pitcher, give a thought or two on the pitcher, and then go into a car wreck of the day. Javier's, what was Javier? Javier's was something Spanish.
Was it? What was the one that you liked? The
can't remember.
There was a song that you really liked. You said one of your favorite songs. Wasn't that Javier?
Was it Volved or Volved? But it wasn't. I think it was Volved or Volved.
Okay.
I think so. Do you have that page somewhere?
Let me see if I think it's still up.
We'll play that a little bit later. Javier gets the start today in the rubber game of the 3-game series. Do you care for the Astros lineup?
Sure.
As they go up against Chris Bassett for the Blue Jays. Bassett once defended the Houston Astros, by the way, on a podcast.
And they've seen him quite a bit in the last couple of years.
Yeah, they have. They've seen him a lot. Astros will lead it off with Jose Altuve. Almost had 3 homers in that game yesterday. He hit that first – in the first inning, he flew out to deep center. He hit the home run off the train tracks. And then that third one just didn't have enough hook.
Yeah. Boy, it was – and it was hugging that little crevice in the left center field gap. And – very tough play for any outfielder to make, but I thought, man, same to you. I thought just a little bit more side spin and that's gone.
A little more hook. This much more hook and it's gone.
Yep.
This much more fade and it's caught. Like it was.
That's true too.
Like it was it didn't have much margin for error there. Altuve leads it off at second. Jordan DHs. He bats second. Tucker in right in the three hole. Middle three. Bregman at third. Yiner back behind the dish. John Singleton plays first base and bats sixth. Signed Brandon Belt. In the bottom three, Chaz in left, Pena's at short, and Mauricio Dubon will be the center fielder batting ninth. You think this was designed, or you think Jake Myers has been benched? Myers wasn't in the lineup yesterday either, by the way. He came on as a pinch runner.
Yeah, I don't.
Back-to-back games.
I don't think he's been benched because I think things happen. But I don't. Maybe that says more about Joe Espada's belief in him being more of an everyday center fielder. I don't mind it.
Well, Dubon didn't play. Oh, you're talking about Myers?
Uh-huh.
I got you.
I look at this, and there's just, to me, there's moves to, if you're going to put Singleton in the lineup, bat him eighth. To me, I'd move him down. I don't want him even that high. I would move Chaz above him for sure. Pena's obviously been hitting the ball very well. I don't believe in John Singleton. And to your point, I'm fine with Brandon Belt. I'm fine with just about anybody not named John Singleton right now.
People argue with me not to sign Brandon Belt.
Well, find somebody else then. Give me another suggestion, people out there that are arguing with Jeremy, because
they'd rather have Singleton. I guess.
Yeah, what you're not seeing in this scenario is until you find somebody else, you have John Singleton not only on your roster but in your lineup, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah, I don't like Singleton in the lineup. I don't like it. Like if you're going to your point, if you're going to play him, how is he in the middle third?
Right.
Like how are you not? How is he batting ahead of Chaz McCormick? How is John Singleton batting in a higher spot than Chaz McCormick? Dusty had Maldi, and Espada has Singleton. Maybe this is Espada's way to show Dana Brown that John Singleton's not a big league player. Hey, this is the bench you gave me. This is the bench I'm going to use to show you that he's not a big league player. I don't think Espada in year one's playing those kind of power plays, though.
I think Dusty might. But I think, and the one thing that Dusty would never do, that as much as we're fairly critical and every right to do it about a guy like Abreu, I don't care if it's a contract year or not. I don't care about anything. Until Alex Bregman starts actually barreling baseballs again, I wouldn't be afraid to move him down either.
What's your move then? What's your counter move?
Obviously, Yiner moves up. So Yiner's your cleanup. Yeah. Okay. And you can, even if you just want to move him one slot, that's fine. But like last night, that's not the old Alex Bregman. I don't know if it's the anti-Yuli, where instead of Yuli giving up beer and pizza and sucking, the 23 pounds ain't helping anybody right now. And he looks like a guy that's not helping himself in a contract year. If it makes him relax a little bit, I don't know. If you're worried about his feelings, to your point, I don't care about his feelings because I think he's good as gone anyway at the end of the year. But move his ass down until he starts putting the barrel on the ball more.
Yeah, I'm not big into huge lineup changes like that 6 games into the year. I think it's too soon for that.
Is that huge, one spot?
Yeah, I think it's very insulting to move a guy out of the cleanup spot after 6 games. Yeah, okay. I do. Now, one spot's not a big move if it's 6 or 7, somewhere down there. Mm-hmm. But to be the cleanup guy and then move down to 5, I think it is a big move. And I'm not making big moves 6 games into the year. A lot of people are clamoring on the text line on Twitter. You get Jordan out of the two-hole. I'm leaving Jordan out of the two-hole. I like Jordan in the two-hole, so I'm not changing my mind there. Here's a tell of two cities when it comes to the Houston Astros. Ocho texting in, this roster doesn't string hits together, doesn't steal bases well, doesn't run the bases well, and doesn't do the little things well enough to win championships. They even have an identity. It's not pitching and defense like 2017. That's Ocho. That's their number one in starters ERA. But here's the other thing, the 8807 on the other side of things. Astros have played 3% of their games. That's less than what I have of... You know what? Our starters are filthy, as we knew they would be. We're winning the World Series this year. Book it. So you have one guy saying, hey, chill out. It's 3% of the year. Astros are going to win the World Series because the pitching's been dominant. Starting pitching has been dominant. And then you have Ocho. They have no identity. Sky's falling. They're terrible at baseball.
I disagree with Ocho. I will pad the brakes on the other one, but I believe that this team is still going to be a team that's competing for the World Series title. I just look at my first thing, like you brought up, like where their starting pitching sits in terms of baseball and how literally dominant they've been. And this early in the season, you can only hope that they get better and they get healthier. When they get healthier, they're going to get better. They look fantastic. So you can hang your hat on that. We just had a team score 10 with 5 home runs the night before. Mm-hmm. So let's slow down on this team doesn't have any offense either. And we've got guys that we know, at least one of them, normally gets going. Has some ebbs and flows in Bregman, but he normally gets going. The rest of those guys, some of the guys that we weren't expecting to get going like they've already gotten going, it just looks like it's going to be a more complete lineup when it starts clicking a little bit more and they get deeper into the season. I'm not worried about one solid identity. It's a solid baseball team, and we're 3% in.
2787 should have went after Votto. Nah, Brandon Belt's better than Votto. Like at this stage in their careers, yeah. Brandon Belt's better than Votto. And Brandon Belt's sitting out there. Go get Brandon Belt. 6030 says that, can we just take a hit and get rid of Abreu? Y'all hate Singleton, but Abreu is done. Neither one of them's very good. Like, I'm not defending Abreu, but Abreu still belongs on a major league roster, I think. Starting as much as he does, probably not. Singleton is a 4A player. Like, mm-hmm. Singleton does not belong on a major league baseball roster. But I want Brandon Belt. Like, I want Brandon Belt to be the starting first baseman against right-handed pitching. And I'm going to continue to bang on that table until somebody picks up Brandon Belt. 4-1-3-3, when giving days off, Dusty and Espada just plug a guy into the spot for a guy he's replacing. That's wrong, in my opinion. That's a valid point. Dusty used to do that the time. Like, mm-hmm. Dubon would play second and bat leadoff. Brandon T., this team will be playing in October. That's all that matters. 6 games in, not worried one bit. Where's your worry level? 1 to 10. We grade things around here.
2.5.
Okay, mine's like a 1-3. I'm like you could have won every single one of these games. And I know you didn't. And you can't do the what if game and you know ifs and buts, candies and nuts, horseshoes, hand grenades, blah 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 blah. But this is still a good team.
It is. I'm not worried about it because we're in our second series of the season. It's way too soon to be passing permanent judgment or serious judgment on this squad. Now, does the middle relief bother me? Yes, but also I'm realistic in stating the fact on multiple occasions, when you get some of this starting pitching back, you could be in a surplus of arms where some of those pitchers that don't make the rotation end up strengthening the point of weakness, and you're still fine. I like the fact that Pena's hitting the ball. I like the fact that you've got guys that are picked up where they left off or other guys that are starting to hit the baseball from the jump. Yiner's obviously hasn't missed a beat. I think it's a better offensive lineup. I think the pitching's going to work itself out, and I think they're going to be fine.
6030, you wanted Mancini, too. You shouldn't manage a team. Do you forget about the game-saving defensive play of Trey Mancini? You don't win a World Series without Trey Mancini, and you have me to thank for that. I said get Trey Mancini for his glove. You need Trey Mancini to be on the Astros for his defensive efforts. I saw the vision. I saw what Mancini could bring to the table as a defensive first baseman. I didn't want his bat. I didn't want his offense. I wanted his glove, and his glove saved you for winning a World Series. Tongue firmly in cheek.
Mm-hmm. I did. I banged that drum pretty hard.
I mean, we all wanted Mancini. Yeah. I thought that would work out swimmingly.
He's still in baseball really somewhere, right?
I think in minor league.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think it's
Miami?
A minor league deal.
I think it's Miami.
Is it Miami? Yeah. I'm getting the feeling Espada's in over his head. I never wanted Espada for the position, TBH. This team does not feel well-managed to start the season. Your reaction to that?
Yeah, again, too soon from a guy that was in every game in the Yankee series, and I don't think he mismanaged. He didn't tell Jake to fall on his face. He didn't tell Altuve to make 2 base-running blunders. I just don't see how you can be that critical. Yes, I think you made a great point. I think the first game of the year, I think he was managing like it was a World Series game or a playoff game when it might have been a little too soon to be that intense in making moves early, like even pulling Jake out after in a bat or two. Whatever. But I don't think it's Joe Espada's fault at this point in the season. We just all need to relax a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think he's in over his head. The aggression on the bases isn't something that I love. And using Hader twice in the Yankee series in the 9th inning when you're losing the game was awkward as well. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We are now elite. We are into the Elite Eight of the Killer Bee Fight Club Tournament. 2 matchups today. Regional finals in the Palillo region and the Ralph Cooper region. Who will advance to the Final 4? The Killer Bee Fight Club Tournament continues next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
32 men enter, but only one can be named champion. These men have faces for radio, but do they have the chin to take a punch?
You want me to hit you?
That's right.
What, like in the face?
Surprise me.
This is so stupid.
Anyone can give a hot take. Everyone has an opinion, but can they fight?
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
It's time for the Killer Bees Fight Club. Let's get ready to...
Okay, that's Michael Buffer's lawyers. I'm not going to say the line, Michael Buffer lawyers. I'm not going to say the line. You're so strong.
time for the Killer Bee Fight Club Tournament to continue. Couple of fights yesterday. Let's give you the results of those fights before we continue. Actually, I wanted to give this Justin Verlander nugget. Ari Alexander tweeted a few minutes ago, Verlander will throw a bullpen Thursday. If it goes fine, he'll start Sunday in Sugar Land. So, oh, Verlander.
So Thursday, that's a little short turnaround. How many he's not going to throw in a big bullpen, right?
I mean, that's. I think it's just your normal throw day between starts. Okay. Yeah, I think it's pretty normal.
Doesn't it feel like we've heard this same Verlander news for about 2.5-3 weeks?
No. He's throwing a rehab assignment on Sunday? No.
Well, no, that's very different. Okay, specifically the rehab assignment, no. But it feels like it's, he's throwing a bullpen. If it goes well, then we're going to progress to the next thing, and then he keeps going back to more bullpens.
I think his last bullpen was like kind of you're going to go at a game tenacity. Like
sure,
maybe 90%.
He did up downs, that's true.
And then today's probably more your normal like throw day between starts.
Okay.
So like his previous bullpen day, he was going with tenacity, up downs like you mentioned. Today was probably his normal between start bullpen, where just like soft, you know, toss, throwing it like 30%, and then start on Sunday. So that was probably what they simulated. They said they would need more than one start, so maybe this starts Sunday, sometime next week, and then I think he's back.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, did we write down when we thought he'd be back?
We said that following week. We didn't do the guess the date. Too soon, I think. It's coming back too quickly. All right, so yesterday we had two fights in the Killer Bee Fight Club bracket. A couple of matchups to advance to the Elite Eight. One of them was an absolute blowout. Seth Payne fighting the show, Highway to Hell versus Highway to Hell. Seth Payne won 83% to 17%.
Is that our biggest margin of victory?
I think so.
I think that was
the biggest. It's deserved, but actually, Payne over Wexler should have been a bigger margin. But
I think so, too.
But
Seth Payne is UConn, and the show is San Diego State.
Yeah.
Seth Payne kills the show on his way to the Elite Eight. The other matchup yesterday, a little bit closer, but really not that tight. John Granato blasts past Landry Locker, 65% to 35%. It seemed like you enjoyed that one.
I did, and the people have spoken. You don't have to provoke me much on that one.
I think I know which way Blanker's voted.
Yeah, no doubt.
I just had to put a little bit in the water.
And the people. Granato and his people. They get the job done. Forget about it.
I didn't have to throw a whole lot in the water. Just a little drop of blood.
Granato shouldn't be so shocked if he's blocked today on Twitter.
All right, we have two fights today with a spot in the Final Four on the line in both of them. First off, in the Charlie Palillo region, Clint Sterner facing off against Adam Clanton, part of the A-team versus the Baytown Baddie, star of the Clint Sterner show.
Jeremy, you're arguing for a man you used to work with. You're arguing for the Baytown Baddie, Clint
Sterner. Oh, you can't do that to me. You cannot do that
to me. Hey,
that's
why I'm doing it. Joel Blank, you are arguing for Adam
Clanton.
I think
he's legit mad, too.
Yeah, I know.
I think he's legit mad.
I have to go first, too,
you
right?
You do, yeah. Each before beauty.
My wife's in my corner, so dang it, I got a chance to take this thing home. I got Iverson tattoos. I am the man with a plan, and I always understand that I can win this game if I tweet my followers and I get a lot of vitriol on everybody against H-Town. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to get all the people that I say good morning to make sure that I say good morning, good afternoon, and good night to Clint Sterner, because they will make sure that I find a way to win.
But how's he going to fight, though?
In a affliction t-shirt? I don't know.
That's my line. Don't laugh at that. He stole my joke.
It's still funny. Take credit. Yeah, take credit for it, but it's still funny.
Yeah, okay. I'll take credit for it then. The Baytown Baddie is going to stop a mud hole right into you.
Don't say me.
He's going to walk you dry. He's tougher than a $2 steak.
Yeah.
When frogs grow wings, they fly and they try to be like the Baytown Baddie. The Baytown Baddie doesn't need any sort of talk to beat one half of the A-team. He's a former professional athlete. Little butterfingers, but that's okay. You can have little butterfingers to win a fight.
He doesn't have to hold a football in this fight, so he's fine.
He drinks milk, so his vitamin D intake is a very high level. I'm talking his calcium. I'm kidding. It's an inside joke within the show. Clint Sterner's bigger. He's stronger. He's faster. He's a better athlete. He jumps higher. He talks with a little better Southern hospitality. Clint Sterner rolls. He's a former athlete.
You're saying Clanton isn't?
Did he play professional sports?
No, but I mean, he still could be an athlete.
Well, he didn't play professional sports. I'm going with the professional athlete.
Okay.
Professional athlete.
Brian, how you got this
who's,
one going?
Who's yeah. younger? Tell the tape.
Ooh, that's, I think it's pretty close.
It's got to be Clint.
I mean, sure?
No, but I'm guessing.
I think they're about the same age.
I think they're both in their mid-40s.
I guess they're about the same age.
Yeah, I think they're both in the mid-40s.
Really?
Let's see. Clint Sterner, fumble, Tennessee.
Oh, God.
When year did that happen? Let's see. That's the easiest way. He was 98. I think he was a junior that year. So he's probably 6 years older than me. I'm 38. Yeah, mid-40. I guess he's 44, 45. Hey, Tom Batty.
Thought he might have been
what
older.
Do you think AC is?
42, 41.
Okay, they're probably about the same age.
Google says he's 46, Clint Sterner.
Okay, so I was right there.
All right, yeah. So get the other one.
So I think I would guess Adam Klein's like 44. That would be my guess.
Okay.
I would say he's early to mid-40s, but he's younger, younger than Sterner.
U.S. phone book says that he's 42 years old.
Okay.
I nailed it.
There we go.
And I don't want to do any more of that.
All right, so that's not enough of an age advantage.
There's an Adam Arkland that's 27 that lives in Alexander, Arkansas.
You think that's the one?
he's been trolling Clint Sterner in Arkansas.
There's a Jeremy Branham who is a criminal.
Oh, yeah. No, that's...
Really?
Yeah, not a good criminal either. Mm. It's really bad. Really tarnishes the name.
There's a true crime podcast I listen to. They'll always tell you about people not to Google when you Google the name of the criminal they're talking about it because they'll come up with all sorts of like...
You're one of them?
No. I mean, maybe. I haven't Googled my name. But you feel bad for these people who are just like teachers and doctors and whatnot, but they share the name with some scumbag.
Well, it's like that one guy who's, was it the radio guy? His name's Jerry Sandusky.
Yes.
The Ravens play-by-play guy.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
His name's Jerry Sandusky, poor guy.
The name was fine until...
I would change my name.
He was already like in his 50s though.
Don't
at that
care.
Point.
Yeah. Do not care. It'd be like having, is it Feinstein or whatever? Feinstein? Who's the...
Michael Feinstein?
No,
the guy that, with Trump and all that?
No, the guy that's in jail that was the movie director that would take advantage of women.
Oh, Harvey...
Harvey Weinstein.
Harvey Weinstein.
Harvey Weinstein. Like, if my name was Harvey Weinstein, I'm changing my name like that.
Yeah, I don't know. Once you reach a certain age, though, I think you're locked in.
What was the dude that was setting up all the...
There's a Curb
chicks
episode.
For all the...
Epstein.
Yeah.
There's a Curb episode where that guy, Larry David's manager, where they think he looks like Harvey Weinstein, and they actually think it's him. It's a funny episode. All right, to the judges.
Oh, yeah, all right. So this is, no need to delay. Clint Sterner, look, the age advantage for Adam Clinton's not enough. I'm taking the professional athlete in this fight. All the rage that Adam Clinton has is going to get him buried in the H by Clint Sterner.
All right, next fight in the Ralph Cooper region, another spot in the Final Four on the line here. Winner of this one gets the winner of the Baytown Batty and the affliction wearing t-shirt son of a gun. One
that was your idea.
What was that?
The affliction.
What?
Just giving you credit. You're welcome.
If Sterner wins, does he get the affliction t-shirt?
High stakes.
It is.
High stakes.
Very high stakes.
Affliction t-shirt on the pole match. Booker T versus Paul Gallant in the Ralph Cooper region. Who's arguing for Booker? Who's arguing for Paul?
I got to give Booker T to the wrestling fan. So Jeremy will be arguing for the five-time world champion. Actually,
weren't you
six-time
fired?
World champion.
Booker T.
I hate you on both of these.
You don't like arguing for Paul?
Why don't you argue for Paul?
To be honest with you, you ask the question, I'll answer it. You know damn well why, too. Because if you don't think you can beat the Larry and Stafford, what the hell am I arguing for you to beat Booker T? Not that I'd have a chance to argue that anyway.
This is your chance to redeem yourself as a defense attorney. Make the case, make the indefensible case.
Why did you almost call Larry and Stafford the show?
I don't know.
Moving right along.
Five times.
Because we
five
just
times.
Got done saying that the show was in the fight and he got beat last night. And I'm thinking Paul was, in passing, said what he said yesterday. And I'm like, and I was already still mad about it because I said Paul would beat Larry and Steph.
All right, arguing on the case of Booker. Five-time. You don't put world champion next to the name of nobody's. My guy has world champion next to his name. Not once, not twice, not three times, not four times. Actually, not even five times. He's a six-time world champion. Stays in phenomenal shape. He plays sports every single day in his backyard. Hits the spinneroony. Incredible athlete. Great on the mic, except for that one time. Booker T wins easily over Paul Gallant, winner of the Ralph Cooper region, on his way to the Final Four.
Paul Gallant owns a cat. You can't do that if you're not a manly man. I think that Paul Gallant as a cat owner is a big feather in his cap. Paul Gallant is the kind of guy that doesn't care what you think. He's just going to find a way to scratch and claw and get the victory. He's going to go run all over the ring to make sure that Booker T has to chase him. He's going to pick his spots. He's going to make sure that he tells Booker T how good he is, and then he's going to actually see it through by trying to dance around just long enough to get him down once and then run for the hills.
He led with he owns a cat.
Yeah, I did.
But he said he was a tough guy, which, thank you, Joel. That means I'm also a tough guy because I also have a cat. So
oh.
I'm a tough guy by proxy. Look, yeah, I got to go Booker T.
Joel was dealt
the impossible hand here. Booker T, five-time champion, is going through with a, I'll say, not an easy win over Paul Gallant, because Paul Gallant, I think, does have the cardio advantage. He can
claw
run around.
Like a cat.
Yeah, claw him like a cat.
Scratch and claw.
He can make it a good fight, but Booker T ultimately prevails.
Yeah, Paul didn't think he would beat Larry and Stafford.
I missed that. Why does he think why couldn't he beat
Larry?
So
we talked
Stafford?
About it. Jeremy and I were talking about it the day before, because they got into a big Twitter spat.
They called him fat.
And so we
Paul
were talking.
Paul called Larry fat?
He called him fat.
And we both were on the side of Paul winning the fight. And Paul walks in and goes, "Hey, I really appreciate you guys having my back. I don't think I could beat Larry." I go, "What'd you say?" He goes, "Yeah, I don't think I could beat him.
Put up the poll?
Yeah, yeah. Like, what are you doing?
I think Larry and Stafford won that poll, too. Paul's the realest.
He did.
Maybe the Paul's the realest here. 2585, I had a friend named his kid ISIS back in 2011.
What?
ISIS?
It was before ISIS was ISIS.
Sure,
this was in 2011.
Okay,
he named his kid ISIS in 2011. That's unfortunate.
That is one I would change my name on, for
that
sure.
That is unfortunate.
Yeah, I would change my name.
Could you imagine the teacher taking roll?
Is ISIS here?
ISIS. Present. ISIS is present. 713-780
ESPN. I hope it was
ESPN.
A female.
Why? It doesn't matter.
Because before the real ISIS, the almighty ISIS was with Shazam.
The more you know.
I'm just telling you. It was a show, actually.
In what decade?
Maybe the 80s.
Rockets lose, Warriors win. It's sad, but it's going to take a miracle now, isn't it? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's time, basketball bettors. It's March Mania. Branham here to tell you about BetUS.com. You can bet on all the games, all the basketball games, college or pro. Pro games every night. I endorse one sportsbook and casino. That's BetUS.com. They've been driving to the basket for over 30 years, over three decades. And this year, BetUS has an epic three-pointer, a 125% sign-up bonus in your first three deposits. That's right. The industry's craziest 125% sign-up bonus, not on your first deposit, not on your second deposit, all three, plus 10% gambler's insurance, and there's even more. BetUS accepts crypto and is offering a 200% crypto sign-up bonus. So gambler's insurance and crypto, you don't see that everywhere. March Mania basketball can get it even more exciting with live in-game betting. Who doesn't love some live in-game betting? Also a blast to check out their casino after the game, a little blackjack, a little roulette, a little craps, where you can get a 250% casino bonus. Get started by visiting BetUS.com or give them a call at 1-800-MY-BETUS to learn all about their bonuses and special offers. BetUS, where the game begins.
You found the Killer Bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. We are the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Honey Glaze Branham, do you know how funny it would be for Booker to actually wrestle Paul, shake him around like a rag doll, and give him a suplex or whatever Booker eaters do? It's messed up. I would take a bump for Booker T. How severe a bump? I don't know.
Oh, what sort of move are we talking?
Would you
take
a
power bump?
Is that a wrestling term?
Yeah, you take like a fall.
Okay.
Big bump, like Mankind jumping off the Hell in the Cell.
Oh, you're not doing that.
No, I don't think I would go anything above the top rope.
Would you take a power bomb?
Off the top rope?
No, just a regular power bomb.
Through a table?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I would have to be somebody that I know is safe, not some green dude.
You got to let that table have a breakaway too, right?
I think they all kind of do.
Yeah, they're gimmicked. They're always breaking the exact same spot every time.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to need somebody
that's the only that's gimmicked in wrestling, though. Those guys are tricky with the way they're able to pull off some of their moves, but...
I mean, they're real moves.
I know.
They're not... It's not, you know, like a magician.
No, but I'm saying to avoid injury and still be able to go top rope and avoid...
That's why I would need a seasoned pro. I'm not going to do it from, like, Brian. I don't want Brian to give me a power bomb on the table.
I would
end up paralyzed. 0315, you're showing your age, Blankers, mentioning Shazam and ISIS.
No,
is Shazam the Shaq movie?
No kidding, though. You think if I was worried about it, you think I'd have mentioned it?
You sound a little bit sensitive.
Was Shaq's movie Shazam or Kazam?
Kazam is right. That's right.
Shazam's the app on the phone that tells you what song is playing.
Okay.
That's what Shazam is. That's where I knew Shazam from. 713-780-ESPN. We'll get to the Rockets in a moment. But Pena is on the HRP listener. Like, all it says on the comments on like why he wants to talk to us, wants to talk to the Killer Bees. What could Pena be wanting to talk to the Killer Bees for? Maybe it's marital advice. Maybe parental advice.
He missed his Mailbag Monday when he always asks us a very perplexing question.
Yeah, Pena, why are you bothering us on a Wednesday?
I've been busy, guys, but, I mean, the guy asked me, he just said, hey, he didn't ask me, like, why do I want to talk to you? He just said, hello. I said, hey, I'd like to talk to the Killer Bees. That's all I said.
Okay.
He didn't ask me why I want to talk to them, but.
Huh. Who's screening these interns? Anyways, yeah, all right, go ahead.
He's cool, though. It's fine. So I'm calling about the Astros. Do you think it's in their head now that all these home losses and why they can't win, do you think it's just in their head, like, we all say we're in the Yankees' head that they can't beat us because it's in their head. Do you think it's like that for our guys here at home? And the second thing I want to say, I'm taking Pagalon in that Booker T fight. I saw him in the Royal Rumble like 2 years ago or something. The dude was gassed after 3 minutes. His body, they've been through a lot, those wrestlers, man. He's hurting really bad. I'm taking Pagalon. Thank you. Have a great day.
Look, I think the Astros know that a lot of these wounds are self-inflicted. I don't think that there's any. I don't think they're looking at the thinking about the home losses. They're just thinking about the losses, knowing that in the Yankee series they were basically tied or winning every single game. You know, as we got from the middle to the late innings, they obviously blew the Blue Jays out in Game One and should have won Game Two. I don't think that this team, as much as we're talking about levels of concern. There is absolutely no concern or panic in a veteran locker room that's done what they've done over the last 7 years.
I think it's in their head.
I don't.
I think it's absolutely in their head. You lose every game in the ALCS at home. What was their record like in the last 35 games? Like 7-28 at Minute Maid Park. Absolutely, they're thinking about it. You had players complaining to Chandler Rome about the batter's eye, and they've actually painted towards the end of last season, last month or so of the regular season, they added more paint to the batter's eye. It's absolutely in their head.
I disagree. I think that
why they add more paint? Why are they complaining to Chandler Rome?
Because I don't think he's talking about the home, and you're talking about things that came up
at home.
Yeah, at home last year. Right now, what they're worried about is righting the ship, just getting wins. I don't think that they're thinking that this is a home thing. They know exactly what it is. It's the fact that they have basically imploded and self-destructed in a lot of ways, where they weren't right there where they needed to be in a lot of these games. I don't think that they're thinking about the fact that it's still the batter's eye or it's a home game that they're losing. They're just thinking the fact they're losing.
1-7-1-1, players are superstitious, so there's no way it's not in their head. They keep losing at home. I feel like you feel it. Like you get the stories, the losses start piling up, this amount of wins and this amount of games. I think it bothers them. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Rockets lost yesterday. Warriors won. It's going to take a minor miracle now for the Rockets to make the play-in. They're down 3 from Golden State with 7 games to play, and Golden State has the tiebreak. Now, you do play Golden State tomorrow, so you can make it 2 with 6 to play, but it's basically 2.5 because that tiebreak is worth half a win. Yesterday's game against the Timberwolves, I actually liked the fight. You know, you were down for a majority of that game, double figures at times. I actually liked the fight from the Rockets to get back in that game, make it tight towards the end. You go in 2 minutes. Minnesota, 50-win team. That was not going to be an easy game. I was actually encouraged with how the Rockets played yesterday.
I was too. I mean, even from a guy individually like Van Vliet, who was struggling to find it late when they needed him most, he got red hot. They cut it to 1. They had opportunities. You know, it's an exciting team to watch. I took away from this that it was entertaining again. It wasn't like they were getting their lunch handed to them all night long. They were down 9-10, you know, kind of hovering, just hanging in there. But then all of a sudden, they find a way to muster up some energy, make some buckets, and suddenly with a couple minutes to play or less, you're in a one-point ball game, like you said, on the road against a very good basketball team. That says a lot about the makeup of this team and the fact that even with losses, teams are going to respect you. You look at it in the big picture, I think they got a win out or close to it to have even a fighter's chance to get in that play-in game. And obviously, it's a must-win starting tomorrow night. But at the same time, I'm not disappointed in the fact that they felt what it felt like to have must-win games in April. and they're not getting knocked on their asses and getting blown out. They're hanging in there throwing haymakers at the end. Edwards was phenomenal in the final minute and a half of the game, and he's got special talent. But don't knock the effort and the fact that you were right there until the bitter end.
I thought they did a really good job with Edwards. You hold him to 21 points, did not make a three, 5 for 16 from the floor. They got to the free throw line, but, I mean, good players are going to make good plays. I thought they defended him really well. Naz Reid, who's the one that just killed you.
Boy, like, he got that one little hot spell that just absolutely...
Killed you.
Yeah, you're right.
Killed you. Jalen Green had one of those nights where the three-point shot wasn't falling down. But these are the games that I want Jalen Green to have. Whenever he's not shooting well from the outside, find me a way to score 20, 25 points. Yesterday was the exact game I'm talking about. There's going to be nights where you can't shoot. Anthony Edwards had a game last night where he had trouble knocking down the three. In fact, didn't make a three. Same night for Jalen Green. Had trouble making threes, 2 for 11. But I wanted to see Jalen Green in a game where he doesn't have the three-point shot, where he can still will you to 20, 25 points. And he did that. He was finishing at the rim nicely.
And to your point, Edwards is dunk or nothing, right? When he gets up there, he is looking to posterize you, and then nothing. When Jalen Green went to posterize Gobert and pulled it down, hung in the air, and found a way to not only make the bucket but get fouled, you're like, man, his athleticism is special. Both of them are. But that play by Jalen Green was pretty incredible.
Yeah, not many people can do that.
No. No, and the fact that he had the wherewithal after realizing mid-flight, well, this isn't going to turn out so well. He's right there where I didn't expect him to totally be. But to be able to hang, get, you know, reposition, make the touch shot, take the contact, get fouled, make the three throw. And like you said, so he gets 3 points on the play, keeps you in the ball game. That was fantastic.
Yeah, I think the Rockets are going to be a playoff team next year. I really do. They're playing so much better on the road. They had a 7-game road winning streak coming into this game. Like, I think they're a playoff team next year. Draymond Green said a couple of weeks ago he didn't give a darn about the Houston Rockets. Jalen Green said they're watching the Warriors, and then LeCron sensationalized that quote. But Draymond Green yesterday sounds like he cares a little bit about the Rockets.
Really big time win for us, especially with the Rockets coming out to play. They have lost a couple in a row. And, you know, you're 3 games behind with 7 games left, and you're losing the tiebreaker. So 4 games behind, in a sense, with 7 to go. My math serves me correctly. Tomorrow will be an opportunity to end their season.
Tiebreak's worth a half.
Their playoff hopes. If my math serves me correctly, maybe there will be one more game. I haven't looked that up. That's just some rough math.
Sounds like Joe George.
For Michigan State math.
It sounds like Joe George doing math.
That's going to be like, no, they're not mathematically eliminated. And you, like,
look at him gaslighting. Great. He's gaslighting. Almost. He's gaslighting mathematicians. He's gaslighting. Like, oh, I'm the one that's going to do the math, but if I'm wrong, you're the guys who are nerds. Like, he's gaslighting. He's gaslighting before anybody even commented back to him, because he knew he was going to be criticized for that, because he knew his math was wrong, didn't have confidence in it.
We scrapping tomorrow night?
What's a good call? He was obviously taking a shot at Tari Eason here.
Sure, Tari Eason. Not Tari Eason, but I'm saying, is it Dylan Brooks or somebody else? Because this team has a propensity to fight in the second half of the season, basically in games and physically. I don't think Jabari's got it. Although I shouldn't say that. Yeah,
they might be guarding each other a little bit. They could be in a spot where they get a little physical.
I would have Jabari in my top two.
Yeah, he did get suspended for a game.
Yeah, and that was like the second time he fought that guy. Or didn't fight the guy, but squared up against the guy. Yeah. I would say Dylan 1, Jabari 2 for power ranking.
I think best case scenario is Dylan. I think that, you know, he already is looking for who's trying to act up on the other squad, and, you know, Draymond's really good at acting up. I think there's a pretty good chance. Because, look, even when you don't think they're going to do it, they do it. And I love it. I love the scrappiness of this team sticking together, because not to your point on the Texans when you got guys that turn their back and walk away when there's a scrap. But this team's got everybody. Everybody's got each other's back, and they like to get into it.
Yeah. It's 5798. I didn't know Draymond Green could do math. Well, he didn't. He was wrong. A tie break is worth half a game. It's worth half a game. It's not worth a full game. It's worth half a game. It's what a tie break's worth. It's worth half a game.
That clip was 52 seconds, and he's been about 40 of it going back and forth about whether or not his math was right.
He was gaslighting the people that were going to criticize them before the people that had a chance to criticize him never had the opportunity. That was weak by Draymond Green. Weak. Super weak.
I wonder if the guys on TNT were ready to use that one.
I hope so. You know what the Michigan State Football Complex is called?
No.
The Tom Izzo football facility.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
It cracks me up every time.
They stayed up all night, think of that name.
they call the football facility the Tom Izzo football facility. It's hilarious. 713-780-ESPN. What does the Diggs move to the Texans do in terms of the Texans being a Super Bowl contender? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word for my good friends at X-Golf, Katie. Look, Chris and his guys, they've come up with some great things for you guys to make sure that you get out some on the greatest golf simulators in the area and the only X-Golf simulators in Houston at X-Golf, Katie. They got a couple of things going on you need to know about. One, they've got spring leagues starting up. Monday night, it's an individual league where you play 18 holes. That begins April the 22nd. The Wednesday night is a two-man scramble league. It starts April 24th, and they play nine holes. You guys want to get in on this. The winner receives a brand-new custom-fit wedge or driver, and we're talking about a chance to play on those great golf simulators on over 50 courses worldwide. And then that Masters promotion they got going on, Sunday of the Masters, April 14th from 3 to 8 p.m. They have a Sunday at the Masters 18-hole scramble tournament. You have to rent the bay. If you rent the bay, there's only eight of them. Your entry includes your team bay, complimentary food coming straight from Augusta National. Best part, you play the Georgia Country Club course on the most accurate simulators technology has to offer. Space is limited. I know they've already sold half of the simulators for that day, but you get in on it because you get the simulator time alone from 3 to 8 p.m. It's worth it. You watch the Masters while you're playing and eating the same kind of food. Check them out today. X-Golf Katie. Get a taste of the Masters and so much more.